Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Health After 30 podcast. Today, I have Dana Gibbs on the show with me, thyroid specialist, and we were just talking beforehand that you are in a very uncharted area in which you work. You bring together the medical aspect of things, you bring together the holistic aspect of thyroid health. And I think that's a really nice duo to have because it gives you a very broad scope of how to treat the thyroid. Would you like to perhaps tell us how you got into this uncharted territory in the first place?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm Dana Gibbs. I am a conventionally trained ear, nose, and throat specialist. And I know that sounds weird. It's like, why do you care about thyroid? Well, I took out thyroids for years, and that's where my training first introduced me and exposed me to thyroid problems. So I went from being in a university setting during my training to private practice, seeing just general population, not people who had been pre-selected as the worst of the worst coming in. They would get sent to me. It's like, oh, I have a lump in my thyroid. I need to have it taken out. And I'm sending them for a biopsy test, and I'm doing sonograms, and I'm doing all these things, saying, yeah, it looks like that's something that could be cancer. We need to take it out. 9 out of 10 of these people, or even more of a percentage than that, would come back, and the pathology diagnosis after we had done this surgery would be chronic lymphocytic thyroiditis. And I'm like, what's that? That's not cancer. And truthfully, I don't think that Hashimoto's disease was something that I was even trained to recognize. But once I kept seeing that diagnosis and looked it up, and I'm like, oh, well, this is an autoimmune disease. Why the heck? You can't cure an autoimmune disease by doing surgery. So what am I doing? And as these patients would come back, and I realized that a lot of them would feel worse after the surgery, not better, it was just like, okay, can I prevent these people from needing to have surgery? And so I found a protocol that said, yeah, you can use thyroid hormone to suppress the thyroid function so that the antibodies stop attacking it, so that the nodules stop to grow. And worked for some people. And almost simultaneously to that, went to a lecture, and this is a bit of a side thing, but ear, nose, and throat has allergy as one of its kind of subtopics. And so I was going to allergy conferences, and I went to this one conference that was a little bit off the main track. It was with a group of environmental medicine specialists where they're looking at, you know, chemical sensitivities and toxins and all this stuff. So I went to one of these lectures, and they started talking about thyroid, and they said, you know, there are people who have all the symptoms of low thyroid, and their TSH is normal, and their thyroid tests are normal. And I'm like, oh my goodness, because I looked at the slide, they were talking about, you know, the hair loss, the eyebrows falling out, the low energy, the brain fog, the you can't remember stuff, the difficulty sleeping, the night sweats, the freezing all the time, the constipation. I mean, the whole list of symptoms. And I was like, those are my symptoms. I have those symptoms. What the heck? You know, and I'd been to the doctor. I just have some antidepressants. Nothing wrong with you. But he said that, and he said, we don't know why, but some people don't have an abnormal TSH. They have this. They respond to this medicine. And they mentioned Armour thyroid at the time. And I just have to say, Armour thyroid is great for when it works, and it doesn't always work. But
the foundation of that is simply from misdiagnosis. I was also really surprised to hear that people with lumps, so you're talking about lumps in the thyroid getting sent to ENTs.
Yes.
But not an endocrinologist.
So the lumps in the thyroid sent to an ENT because I'm the surgeon to take out the lump. Whether or not they had been to an endocrinologist, this is an autoimmune disease. What are we doing for this autoimmune disease? Why are these patients given this medicine not feeling better? And that's kind of the next part of the story, because once my eyes were open to that list of symptoms, yes, I started on the medicine. It was like, boom, miraculous. This is what normal people feel like. Can sleep now. I can wake up without the alarm. I don't hit the snooze 14 times. I'm not freezing. It's hot here. I literally never went anywhere without a fleece jacket because I was always cold.
People are walking around with these symptoms and not knowing that it's actually a thyroid condition. Is this something that you see in practice a lot?
See it in practice a lot. And I'll tell you a story. So because I was in ENT, I was doing everything to do with sinuses and allergies and all that kind of stuff. And so here, I'll give you an example. This one patient, she was a school teacher. She was mid-30s, came to me because she had terrible sinus problems, you know, and he did a CAT scan. And sure enough, she had terrible sinus problems. And I was like, you need sinus surgery. You need sinus surgery. But I do a comprehensive review of symptoms. And I ask people, you know, do you have problems with constipation? Have you gained weight? Is your hair falling out? Is the, you know, all these, you know, dry skin, blah, blah, blah. I ask them all these questions. And when people check yes to 5 or 6 or 10 of those symptoms, I'm like, you know, you could have something going on here that doesn't have to do with your sinuses, but would you mind terribly if we did some other blood tests? And so I had learned from a mentor, not the guy that gave that original lecture, but another fellow that I found who actually has Hashimoto's, which is why he got into it. I had learned a way of doing lab tests now that I will explain to you later if you're interested, that will show me, okay, do you have a problem with your thyroid function? Do you have Hashimoto's antibodies? Do you have an adequate function of thyroid in your body? And when I get the answer and it's yes, I'm like, you know, yeah, I think you need this sinus surgery. But how about while we're waiting, since it was February and she's a teacher and we don't take summer break until June, why don't you try this thyroid medicine first? And then she didn't come back. She didn't come back. And right before school was supposed to start again at the end of, you know, almost September, she came back. And I was like, well, it's kind of too late to schedule your sinus surgery this summer. And she's like, oh, I don't need that anymore. I'm fine. Sinus sub problems all went away. I just need a refill on that thyroid medicine. Mind blown. And that happened over and over and over. And I was like, I'm really onto something here. Because one of the huge problems that people do not realize is that if your thyroid function is not adequate, your immune system doesn't work right.
Yeah,
your immune system's not working. You become insulin resistant, which means you gain weight, by the way. Like I said, you're cold all the time. You're exhausted all the time. Your sleep quality is terrible. When your sleep quality is terrible, nothing works right.
No.
Nothing works right. Your periods become irregular. Some people miscarry over and over and over again. I see that so much. I see so much of that. You just can't get pregnant in the first place, or you stop having periods altogether, or you have horrible PMS. I mean, there's so many things that once you get your thyroid balanced right, it's just like, nah.
It's working.
Everything comes back into place.
So what is the testing that you do? You test antibodies? This, you said, let's get it.
So,
you know,
yes,
you want to get into it?
I test antibodies. And if somebody has any symptoms that suggest that they may be hyperthyroid, if they have anxiety, if they have rapid heart rate, if they've been sweating, anything like that, I will also test the antibodies for another thyroid autoimmune disease, which is Graves' disease, which generally creates hyperthyroidism, too much thyroid. The problem with Graves' disease is that people like the way they feel. They have all this energy. Their weight stays thin. You know, they feel pretty good. And you put them on the medicine because it's dangerous to have way too much thyroid in your body. And see in people who are ordering their own labs is that they hear TPO, which stands for thyroid peroxidase. And you can order a lab test for thyroid peroxidase. It's an enzyme that's in your blood. You can order that. So people come and they give me this lab test and they say, my TPO is high. And I'm like, yeah, but everybody has that. What you want to look at is the antibody to TPO. And so that's lab number one. That's really important that you get it right. And then the next set of labs, I do order the TSH. Don't spend a lot of time on it unless it's really grossly abnormal. But I do order the TSH. And then I order the free T3. I order the free T4. And then I order the total T3 and the reverse T3. And I order those two together because I use them to compare to one another. And what I do with that is total T3 divided by reverse T3 gives me a number. And that number is somewhere between 2 and 20. 2 is awful. 10 is kind of getting okay. 12 to 14 is perfect. Too high is also not great. And so I use that not only to diagnose dysfunctional thyroid, but I use it to follow once I'm giving somebody medicine. You don't want to give them too much.
Yeah. Otherwise,
and
they're going
so
to
you
have...
can use that ratio, that number. And it doesn't matter whether you're in Europe or whether you're in the US, whether it's molar, whether it's micro picograms per mil, that ratio is always going to be the same. Between 12 and 14 is where you want that ratio to be. And if it is, then that indicates to me that you have enough T3 compared to the amount of reverse T3 that's in your body to drive your metabolism, to drive your cellular production of enzymes and proteins and all the things that your body needs to produce heat and energy and feel good and build muscle and all the things that you don't do when you have inadequate thyroid function.
So usually people have these symptoms and they get testing because they have these symptoms. What happens in the case that you don't have any symptoms, but your antibodies, for example, are showing that you have Hashimoto's?
Kind of depends on the history, because a lot of times when I find Hashimoto's antibodies on a person and they feel fine and they're asymptomatic, well, they don't come to me if they feel fine, but you could go back in their history and you can go, okay, when did the symptoms start and when did they kind of taper off? And a lot of people, it'll be shortly, either during or shortly after they've had a pregnancy, or it'll be a childhood illness that they had, or another, you know, maybe an adult onset illness that they've had. But one of the things about Hashimoto's disease is that it doesn't really do anything long lasting to you on time until your thyroid function starts to go down. Hashimoto's is a little bit of an orphan amongst autoimmune diseases. And I'll just use type 1 diabetes as an example. Type 1 diabetes comes in when people are very young. It's an autoimmune disease that attacks your pancreas. It destroys your ability to produce insulin. And it leaves you lifelong needing a medication that's very fussy, very difficult to control, that it has to be injected, has to be, your blood sugar has to be monitored basically many times a day. So it's super, super troublesome and expensive. And it's a very common cause of early death and debility. Doctors are like, oh my gosh, if we can catch this autoimmune disease before it totally destroys your pancreas, we should do that. So these new biologic drugs that are being made, some of them can actually catch and slow down and maybe prevent the continuation of the damage that happens with type 1 diabetes. Hashimoto's disease, it's more like, okay, well, you just have to take a pill once a day. So no drug company is doing anything to try to stop Hashimoto's antibodies. No drug is out there that does that. But what Hashimoto's does is it's kind of like a red flag. It's susceptible to autoimmune diseases. It's two different diseases. It's the Hashimoto's antibodies themselves running amok in your body and attacking your thyroid and making you feel like crap. And then it's the damage that's already been done. It's two things that you have to do. First of all, you have to say, okay, what can I do to stop this autoimmune attack? Am I eating something that's causing it? Did I have an infectious disease that's causing it? Do I have an anxiety disorder that's just ramping my stress level up to the very tippity top? What can we do to support your body so that the autoimmune attack stops or at least slows down dramatically? The advantages of that is that it fixes all those other hormone imbalances that come in as a result. So that's kind of nice too. And it can prevent you from getting that next autoimmune disease, which is really nice. You don't have adequate thyroid function going on in your body. You don't have the energy to cook healthy meals. You don't have the energy to go to the gym and do the exercise program. You don't have the energy to look at
think about
what's deficient in my diet that I need to add. What's in my diet that I'm sensitive to or allergic to or toxic from that I need to get rid of? You know, those questions are dramatically harder to answer when you have no energy, which is what happens when your ratio is completely at the T3 or T3 ratio is completely out of balance. And when you don't have adequate thyroid hormone floating around in your body, whether it came from a pill or it came from your thyroid glands, a little bit irrelevant, without which you will die. You know, it's
So the approach that you would take for when I'm, as if I can summarize it, is to support thyroid health with medication to ensure that you even have the energy to be able to then reflect on everything else that's going on in your life.
So there's nutrition. And nutrition is not just getting enough of something. It's, are you having too much of something? Or is something missing? Or is something toxic? Or is something triggering your immune system in a way that's not helpful? So we've got our nutrition, we've got our sleep, we've got movement. You know, and movement doesn't have to mean cardio. It doesn't have to mean you work yourself to death. It can mean stretching and yoga. You know, if that's all you're up to at this point, let's do some of that. Because chronic pain is another big thyroid symptom. If you don't have enough thyroid in your body, man, you hurt a lot.
And that's just quality of life is then just taking
just
a nosedive.
Taking a nosedive, yeah. So movement is one. And yes, there are certain, you know, depending on the level where somebody's at, there are certain exercises that I will recommend for them. Personally, have really gotten into weight training and strength, you know, strength training recently. Mm. And there's a lot of reasons why I think that works. And if we have time, we'll talk about that. And then stress relief, mindfulness, coaching. Do you need to look at how your outlook on the world is affecting your day-to-day existence? One of the craziest things in my life, and this is not something that, you know, I got very lucky. I took a pill and it fixed me. Mm. You know, I got very lucky. I don't actually have Hashimoto's disease. I have another kind of thyroid condition that actually gets way worse when I get stressed. So what I had was simultaneously, I got into a situation where my stress was lower and I started on the right medicine and boom, everything went great for me.
Menopause. And I would also even say perimenopause. It's a transition. The thyroid is everything with hormonal health. And I feel like, you know, our menstruation coming into perimenopause, it's where our hormones, you know, reproductive hormones.
I'm now a Menopause Society certified practitioner, but here's the thing. I learned most of the stuff that I know about perimenopause and menopause from the guy who taught me thyroid. Your endocrine system is just that. It's a system. It does, you know, thyroid is not existing in a vacuum. Sex hormones are not existing in a vacuum. You don't know both and you don't know either. And so he made that very, very clear. It's like, you need to know how to manage insulin resistance. You need to know how to manage their hormone deficiencies. You need to know how to manage perimenopause, because every thyroid patient that you have is eventually going to get to perimenopause. And when they go to their gynecologist and they get this whatever treatment, it's going to mess up your thyroid treatment. It's going to change it. If you change your weight, if you change how you eat, menopause is just because you hit perimenopause doesn't mean thyroid doesn't exist anymore.
When women are going through perimenopause and menopause, that their symptoms, if they don't have thyroid, that their symptom, a thyroid condition, that their symptoms are sometimes crossing over. Because I feel like this phase that the symptoms they experience are so similar to some of the symptoms that you were going to experience in a thyroid condition.
I would say 80%
of the symptoms are the same.
There's so much overlap. You know, okay, so we're talking about sleep and you're cold all the time and then you lay down in bed and you cover up with a million blankets and you wake up drenched in sweat. Well, what is that? It's a hot flash. It's the same damn hot flash that a perimenopausal woman has, only it's just only at night. And somebody who's in their 30s, early 40s, mid 40s says, I'm having night sweats. Well, I don't know whether it's thyroid or perimenopause. I have to do blood tests and figure out which one it is. And support both, because it probably is a little of both.
Yeah. Is it common for women who are going through perimenopause and menopause to perhaps then also get a thyroid condition? Or is it something that's usually always, that's already there and now it becomes more predominant?
It's hard to say, because we're talking about how sometimes the Hashimoto's antibodies are there for 10, 15, 20 years before the symptoms hit. Mm. And so sometimes we don't know. So, you know, you may not have the symptoms until you hit perimenopause. And then all of a sudden, the stress of that causes the antibodies to surge up and it damages your thyroid. And boom, then you start being symptomatic. Anybody who's in that perimenopausal time, and you get your hormones balanced and you do all the things with changing your exercise, changing your diet, doing all the things that we have folks do in perimenopause, it doesn't fix everything. Mm. Then I'm always going back to the thyroid. Let's go back and check it again. And not just with the TSH, but the other labs that I was talking about. Perimenopause itself is so stressful for some women that I think it can probably trigger Hashimoto's disease.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the cardinal things, is that it's a stress trigger. Somebody has that genetic tendency, and we don't know whether you do or not, but it's a major stressor that will trigger it.
I loved how you started it with, how do you waver through a stressful situation without being stressed?
It's not just mindfulness, but it's a mind-body connection, where if you have, I don't know, if you come home every evening after work and you've got a pounding headache, you reach up and you're tense, so tense through your head, and you feel those muscles and you're like, oh my God, they're tender, they're tight. It's like, okay, so carrying your stress here in your temples, and if it's triggering a headache for you every single day, it's like, okay, what is your body trying to tell you by the fact that you're carrying this extreme amount of stress and tension right here in your temples, or any place else in your body? Sitting down and just being quiet and thinking to yourself, okay, what is the thought stressing me out? What is the feeling? Where's the feeling distress? Is it anger? Is it fear? Is it, you know, whatever it is. There are five emotions that cause stress, and they are fear, anger, help me out here. Shame is
doubt,
one of them.
Then, remorse.
Loss is one of them, like sadness. There are specific emotions that trigger a physical response in your body, and that's cortisol. It's another hormone.
Yeah.
When you have too much cortisol racing through your body, it raises your blood sugar, it raises your blood pressure, does all kinds of negative things to you. And if you live with that high cortisol every day because you're feeling some of those feelings every single day, it's like, okay, what thought is triggering those feelings? Our modern world, it's not really, you know what, I have to go out and hunt and a lion might get me every single day. It's more, I have to go out and I have to drive in traffic and my boss hates me and he's going to take credit for what I did. And there's none of those things that are threatening our life on a day-to-day basis. That's the way your body handles it, is by releasing the same hormone that it uses to handle life-threatening starvation, war, famine, abuse, you name it. Severe illness, that's another one. So if you can look and say, okay, I see this thought, you know, sit quietly, write down that thought and go, okay, my boss is ruining my life. Is that really true? Or is it the thoughts that I have about my boss are ruining my life? You know, and yes, you may not be able to change the circumstance of the job that you have right this minute, but if you're really in a toxic job that's making you that stressed every day, you might owe it to yourself to find a different job. But keep in mind that it was the thought about the boss
triggered
the stress response. And if you go to another job without figuring out how to handle the stress response, you're just going to be in the same boat again.
And this ties so nicely into the whole aspect of autoimmunity and thyroid conditions, because as you said before, high amounts of stress.
Over the edge. That's exactly right. You know, it drives me a little bit crazy every time, you know, because I'm on a lot of social media groups with other doctors and they get on there and they say, oh, so stressed out. And the thing comes up where people say, oh, it's just stress. And I'm like, it's not just stress. You've got to handle that. You can't just let yourself be continually exposed to stress and not do anything about it, because it's going to kill you.
Stress, worry, you know, we worry ourselves sick.
Yeah.
And how that sickness then presents in our body.
When you're stressed, cortisol is high. What's the first thing that gets destroyed? Your sleep. Because you're laying there and your mind's going, I got to do tomorrow. Oh, no, you're not going to get good sleep with that. Then you're going to wake up tomorrow and it's a vicious cycle. It becomes worse and worse and worse because sleep is underlying everything.
You've gone through such an incredible journey. I feel like from your ENT surgery to finding out through thyroid, and now even, you know, to start to go to, okay, what's the root cause of why we're even getting our thyroid condition and working on that. It's a real root cause approach. I really appreciate your wisdom. I really appreciate your experience and what you've brought to this conversation, because you've gone through the throes of it yourself? Do you hang out on social media? I'll put your links where people can find you. Where do you hang out most?
I have an Instagram page. I have a Facebook page. It's danagibbsmd.com. It's where you can find me there. And that's also my website, danagibbsmd.com. I have a podcast. It's called Beyond the Thyroid. It's pretty new. I just started that this summer. I'm getting ready to release thyroid and weight gain and why it's so darn hard for people who have thyroid problems to keep the weight off and stay at a healthy weight.
Well, Dana, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
I've enjoyed it very much.
The information provided in the Health After 30 podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be considered as medical advice. It's not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or health condition. Always consult with your qualified healthcare professional before making any decisions related to your health or before starting a new treatment or health regime. Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening. Be well, and I'll catch you next time.